percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Hello there, and welcome. Hope you're having a good time. Hope things are going well for you wherever you are. It's that time of year when everybody wants to talk about spooky things. And the cool for me, the best thing is that it doesn't happen just one time of year. It happens all the time. There's if you pay attention, there are all sorts of wonderful, weird, wild, unbelievable, fantastic, unexplainable things happening. It's just a matter of keeping your eyes open and paying attention. So in a couple of minutes, we're going to get into the interview here for the show, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. My guest, Bruce Gernon, is on the line. But first, I want to go back into Wendy's Coffee House. On the blog, if you're following along, posted the stuff for the last interview, and that was the haunted house in Seattle. This is getting a whole lot of interest because of the wealth of documentation, all the people who've gone to investigate it, explore it. There are places closer to Kansas City that are also really very well known for being haunted, and you can get online and search those. Weston is the one we're having the event at, where we're going to be doing ghost tales, the dinner, and then the tour of the local houses that are haunted, known to be haunted. And the thing is that just because a house is haunted, it doesn't have to have some big long history or backstory. It can happen anytime. It can be a brand new house. The location, the timing, a nearby death, you know, something, a catastrophe, anything can create that little blip, that little window of opportunity. And the more sensitive you are, usually the more you'll be likely to pick up on it. But you don't have to be sensitive. Sometimes it's a matter of right place, right time. You may be considered completely, totally skeptical, logical, practical. Everything's black and white. There's no gray. Well, the cool thing about this life is there's a whole lot of gray. And sometimes even people who are diehard skeptics bump into the gray, and they might, you know, lose for a moment, their sense of direction, their sense of what is real. And that's when life gets interesting. All right. So what I try to do is interview people who, like Keith Linder, with his experience with a haunted house in Seattle. He had no real concept or belief or interest in finding out if ghosts are real, and let alone living with a poltergeist. But when those things happen, then you become a whole lot more curious and life is more interesting. I like the sci-fi stuff because it creates the opportunity to imagine, the opportunity to maybe shift gears, to open your mind and be receptive to things that every day you don't have a chance to get into. The 9 to 5, you got to go to work, got to get the groceries, got to take care of the kids, got to do whatever, you know, register for whatever it is this month. All these things are happening to keep you in a lockstep. Everything happens on a schedule, on a routine, da, 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 da. This stuff that we're talking about happens more often when you break your routine. You might have changed something just a little bit, and it's just a bit off from the day before. Or you're doing the routine, but you're zoning out. You're kind of in that little in-between of nothing's really set. So it's that window of something is shifting, and it catches your attention. The reason I approach it like this is because I've had these experiences, and I know what it feels like. And I also know that it makes you question your sanity. Are you really picking up on this? Is this happening? Is it a dream? Is it an in-between? I've done lucid dreams. I've done out-of-body experiences. I've had ghost experiences. I've had conversations with people who are not dead who've told me things to tell the people who are alive, that they are still alive. They just don't happen to have a body. That kind of stuff, it wasn't something I wanted to do, and it wasn't something I immediately decided, oh, this is a great idea, I'm going to tell everybody. No, it took about 20 or 30 years, okay? But that part also gave me that time, that distance, that waiting, a chance to investigate and explore thousands of other stories, thousands of other instances where these things are happening. Now, follow along with some of that on the the blog Talking to Nightlights or Wendy's Coffee House or the book is Talking to Nightlights. Okay, I don't usually talk about this because it's either I've got a certain direction to go, but since it's that time of year and I'm talking to more people who've had these really amazing, unexplainable experiences, I just want to say I'm not talking to them because I'm a skeptic. I'm talking to them because I've had a feeling, a sense in some way, shape, or form that mirrors what they're talking about. It doesn't mean that everything that they say is something I've experienced, but I do have empathy and I do have a sense of connectivity with these kinds of issues. And the more receptive you are, the better your chance of getting information that might be valuable to somebody else who hasn't quite hit that little window of reality shift. All right. So that's why with Bruce is going to share a few stories here that are really pretty phenomenal. The Bermuda Triangle. Everybody thinks they know. Okay, this is a story of the Bermuda Triangle. It's some little area here and things happen and that's all there is to it. And there are a few of those across the planet. But that's the one that gets a whole lot of, in our part of the world, airtime. And Bruce has had experiences that made him question his reality. And so I'm going to let him tell you about that. Hey, Bruce, I know you're waiting in the wings there. Thank you. I really appreciate the information you put in this book.
Hey, Wendy. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Well, part of it, though, is because you are a pilot and you have that whole expertise of being able, having flown in that area, you bring a whole different sense of, awareness and of math to this equation that says there's something else going on here than just a triangle.
Yes, I've been flying in that area of the Bermuda Triangle for 50 years now. But I've recently retired from flying, though, because my depth perception is and my vision is not nearly as accurate as it used to be.
Well,
and when I had this main experience, my vision was actually 20/10. So I could see things that most people couldn't even see.
And I think that's why you were the perfect person to have this experience.
Yes, it was an incredible experience. But my dad was with me. He was a pilot, too. He was the co-pilot.
Okay.
And we had a business partner with us, too.
So it wasn't just you out there imagining a bunch of stuff. You had witnesses.
Right. Yeah, they worked with me right up to their deaths, always backing me up in my research.
Well, I think that's the fantastic thing about this, is that you've done some tremendous math and homework. And if you're listening, Bruce Gernon, author, co-author of Beyond the Bermuda Triangle, True Encounters with Electric Fog, Missing Aircraft, and Time Warps. And the book, you also have a website. The website is the Electronic Fog, electronicfog.com. I want to get into the story so you can set it up the first time that you had this experience and how that shifted your focus in life. Okay, is that a good way to set it up?
The shift took a long time, though, but you're talking about a lot of time.
The first time it happens is like an, oh, wow, what the heck do I do moment, and you kind of put it on the back burner. And then you come back to it when you feel sane and you feel like, well, okay, maybe I can investigate this and not feel like I'm off my rocker. Does that set it up better?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, after I experienced it, I didn't even mention it to anyone for just over a year because it was unexplainable. But I kept it in my mind every day I would think about it at least twice a day for like 15 minutes or so. I'd concentrate on what I experienced. So I did that for just over a year, and I kind of created a permanent memory mm-hmm. of what it visually looked like in my mind.
Okay.
And, I watched a TV show, Dick Cavett's show, and a scientist named Ivan Sanderson was talking about a strange area. It wasn't even called the Bermuda Triangle then. I think he called it the Limbo of the Lost. He mentioned that it had something to do with time or time warps or space-time travel. And that's when I realized that was the key to my experience, and I was better able to explain it when I started researching time and how it works and what it did to me on that experience.
Okay, now this is a perfect time. We're going to take a break, a quick break, and time will just feel like it evaporated. Very quickly. Okay, hang on. This is Wendy's Coffee House talking with my guest about Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. Bruce Gernon, he's going to tell us what that set up for him, the 15 minutes twice a day for the next year, figuring out what the heck had happened and where to go with it. Next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. You know those moments when you kind of zone out? Well, maybe you don't because you zoned out. Okay, what happens when reality shifts and you experience something that is not supposed to be possible is it takes a little while to figure out, for one thing, did it really happen? And then the other thing, if you tell anybody, are they going to get it? Are they going to dismiss it? Do you have anywhere to go with it? And so after a while, if you are kind of logical and a little bit more critical in your line of reasoning and thinking, possibly a little bit skeptical, the event didn't go away. And so the next step is, well, do I start sharing this? And I'm really glad that Bruce saw the show that he did that talked about the time element, because this is what factors in with this Beyond the Bermuda Triangle story. What I'd like you to do is set up that story. What happened with you in that plane when all of a sudden it didn't make any sense and it went beyond anything you before had experienced?
On December 4th of 1970 that I experienced this. So I've been researching it for all these years. And if there's any pilots out there that are listening, I would like them to listen carefully to what I have to say, because it's especially important for pilots to understand what I'm explaining about what I call electronic fog. And they could experience it themselves someday. If they haven't heard of this, they should listen to it and try to understand it. Because it's for real, and it's been a problem with convincing mainstream science to accept. But I can guarantee it will be accepted in the future, because you know I experienced it firsthand. Actually, I've experienced it twice, and it's rare. But there's hundreds of pilots that have experienced it, and I've talked to them. Most of them.
What happened?
Well, I had been flying in the Bahamas for about 6 years before this happened. And so I was already thoroughly familiar with the area. And we were working on a project to develop in Andros Island. And I had flown there about 12 or 13 times before on a round-trip flight from Palm Beach International in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go direct to Bimini and then make a slight turn to Andros. And we would go to an airport called Fresh Creek. And that's where there was a Navy base. It's a scientific Navy base that works with RCA. On the development of submarines and torpedo warfare that they practice in what's called the tongue of the ocean, which is a deep area of 6,000 feet in between Nassau and Andros. It's about 30 miles wide, 100 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
And we had spent a few days there, so it was a Friday morning. We were heading back, or planned on heading back in the morning to Palm Beach, and it was raining. And so there wasn't any telephones back in 1970 on Andros Island. So we couldn't really get any weather reports. And so we waited for the rain to clear out. And I've investigated the charts, the weather charts from that day in modern times, and it showed that there was a huge area of storms covering the entire island of Andros, which is the biggest island in the Bahamas. It's 40 miles wide and 100 miles long. And it finally started to clear up. But on the weather chart show, there were some widely scattered storms around South Florida, and then just the one big area of storms over Andros. So it started letting up in the afternoon, so we went ahead and took off. And exactly 3 p.m. is when we lifted off.
Mm-hmm.
Time was very important back then to watch your time. I mean, your watches. We all had wrist watches, and there was a watch on board the airplane on the panel, a real quality watch. And so we climbed to 1,000 feet because it was overcast at 1,500 feet. And I was flying in a brand new Bonanza A36 aircraft, which is still made today. The airframe is still identical. And it's one of the best single-engine propeller airplanes made. And we stayed over the interior of Andros for 10 minutes at 1,000 feet, and we're cruising about 180 miles an hour. And when we got to the western shoreline of Andros, and that's where the shallows of the Great Bahama Bank ties in with the island, and I could see that it was clear over the ocean. So that looked good. And when we got to the shoreline, I was able to start ascending to our assigned altitude of 10,500 feet. But as I looked in front of me, I saw this strange cloud that it didn't look that strange. It looked like a typical lenticular cloud, which is a lens-shaped cloud with smooth edges.
Mm-hmm.
But what was strange, and I really didn't think about it at the time, was that it was like hovering about 500 feet above the ocean. And it was about a mile long and a half mile wide, 1,000 feet thick, and it looked harmless. But see, lenticular clouds, they normally only form at like 20,000 feet or so. And this was down real low, so
okay.
That was odd.
Yeah.
So it looked harmless, and it was right directly in my flight path. I'm using instruments, electronic instruments in the compass, to fly direct to Bimini. And so I flew right over the cloud. And then when I got enough altitude, a few thousand feet, I was able to contact Miami Radio, it was called. Well, they still call it that today. And they gave me a weather report, and they said it was just some widely scattered storms over Florida. I should be able to circumnavigate them to get to Palm Beach. And it was clear in the Bahamas. And I filed my flight plan with them. That took a few minutes, and so I wasn't really concentrating on that little lenticular cloud anymore. So then when I signed off the radio with them, I looked around checking the weather, and I couldn't believe what I'm seeing here. The lenticular cloud apparently had spread out, and it had spread out at an incredible rate. And it was right below the airplane, and I thought, well, maybe it's a cumulonimbus thunderstorm, and I just happened to be climbing right over it, right at its birth stage, and I'm climbing at 1,000 feet per minute, and it's ascending at the same rate as me. And another thing I didn't realize is that how fast this thing was spreading out. I mean, it wasn't that abnormal for
Bruce. Hang on, take a break.
Okay,
we're going to do a quick news break here and come back with finding out how you get out of this amazingly weird, odd, out of the ordinary cloud. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you for listening. Thank you in Japan. I love seeing the stuff on the podcast. Worldwide audience. You rock. Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. Kind of brings the time warp element to life. Whatever time you're listening. This is an amazing story. So Bruce is in this weird cloud, and it's all of a sudden basically quadrupled. It's all around him. Before, it was just like a lenticular cloud in front. He was going to fly, and that was it. It was just there. And then all of a sudden, he's aware that it's everywhere. So it's like a donut around you. Are you in a clear space, or what's it like at that point?
Well, at that point, it was in the build-up stage, and I'm climbing 1,000 feet per minute, but I'm going forward at 105 miles an hour, and I didn't think of it at the time, but this cloud is going faster than 105 miles an hour, and that's what's really unusual for a cloud to expand that rapidly. And it would build up and engulf the airplane, and I'd go inside it, and visibility was very low, maybe only 100 feet. And then since it was building up, upward, it would boost me, and I'd escape it and get above it, a couple hundred feet or so, and then it would catch back up to me, and I'd go back in. So this went on for about five more times until finally, when I got to 11,500 feet, I broke free of this cloud, and I was in clear weather over the Great Bahama Bank, so I leveled off, started cruising at 195 miles an hour, and when I looked on either side of me, it was incredible what I was seeing here. This little lenticular cloud had spread out on either side of me as far as I could see, which was over 10 miles on either side. And an unusual thing about it, I noticed it had like a perfectly symmetrical curve to it. I figured it was a squall. It had turned into a squall instead of just a little singular cell thunderstorm. But the strange thing was how symmetrical it was. But anyway, as I started to fly away from it, and I put it out of my mind and concentrated on our flight path, which is still direct to Bimini. And then after only about three, 4 more minutes, I look in front of me, and now I'm seeing this storm was in front of me now. And again, it was perfectly curved. And this time, though, the curve was facing in front of me instead of behind me. And then I was thinking, well, maybe I can fly under it. And then I noticed that I couldn't fly under it because it was laying right on the surface of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it had built up now to probably over 40,000 feet.
Whoa.
In that short a period of time, it was I'd only been in it for like 14 minutes at that time, and it had spread out that far and that high. And so I penetrated into it, and it was just full of intense electricity. And there were flashes of electricity. There weren't lightning bolts. And the deeper I went, the more intense the flashes became, and the brighter they became, and the darker it became when they were not flashing. So it was kind of spooky, so I decided to pop out of it. So I made a sharp turn to the south, to the left, and got back out into the clear, started traveling along the edge of the storm. I contacted Miami Radio at this point, and I told them that I was deviating from my flight path because of a storm.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to see if I could fly around it. And they said, okay, great, no big deal. Let us know when you get around it. So I'm flying south, and I noticed that this curve storm continues to curve, and so apparently it's connected to this squall that I had just escaped. And so now I'm realizing I'm kind of like trapped inside this donut-shaped storm. I call this storm a mother storm.
Okay.
It creates this electronic fog. But then I notice that there are two ends of the storm that they met on the bottom, but there was like a big valley in between them. And so apparently the storm had formed just offshore of Andros and then had spread out in a donut shape, and it met on the opposite side about 40 miles away. And the valley was closing. I figured, well, that would get me to Miami because it was named, the opening was facing toward Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some photos in my new book that shows some clouds over the Everglades that are similar to this. It shows how they can connect on the bottom, and then two anvil heads will form on either end at the top, and then those anvil heads meet, and they form a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an actual photograph of some tunnels in my new book.
Yeah.
That I took way back in the late 70s, and they were over the Everglades. And so these tunnels are unusual because they're perfectly horizontal. So maybe some of the pilots that are listening have seen these tunnels before. I've seen dozens of them from the ground. And they usually last only on an average of about 3 minutes. And so I didn't realize that at the time, that they didn't last that long, because it was close to 1,000 feet in diameter, but it was about 10 miles long, though. And I figured, well, I could fly through that, and I consulted with my co-pilot, and my dad said, yeah, let's go ahead and see if we can get through it. I guess he felt the same way as me. We were trapped inside this big storm,
mm-hmm.
and this was like the only way out. So I was at 11,500, and the tunnel was right around at 10,000 to the center of it. So I started aiming down, descending, and I'm watching it, and it's slowly getting smaller. And so I go to full power and up to 130 miles an hour, and then I penetrate right into the center of it. And that's when something incredible happened. When I penetrated into the center of this, these strange lines form. And you can see it on the cover of my new book, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
An artist has done a nice rendering of what it looked like just as I was inside the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other page where it shows the parallel, the lines flying through the lines as it begins to dissipate.
Yeah, you can see them on the cover. But on Amazon.com, we've got a new book. It's my first book, was called The Fog, and that was in copyright for like 11 years. Now it's out of copyright, so I own it, and. And that one's printed in 7 languages, but some of the languages are still in active. They are active, but the new revised book is called Bermuda Triangle Legacy, and you can see it on Amazon if you want to look at the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows what it looked like when I made it out of the other end of the tunnel, and that's an artist's rendering of that too. Combined with computer graphics that I helped create. But
well, it's nothing like you would ordinarily see.
No, I think what I was seeing was the fabric of time, physically seeing time.
When you finally got to the end of your journey, how much time? What was the difference?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, but I mean, it's at least 30 minutes. See, when I entered this tunnel, it should have taken me 3 minutes to reach the other side, but it only took about 20 seconds Okay. And that's because that's where the time change was starting, right inside this tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I made it out the other end of the tunnel, the wingtips scraped the edges of it, and contrails formed, and I felt the only real physical sensation during this event that was unusual was this strange feeling of zero gravity combined with hydroplaning forward. And I've never felt that before. I felt zero gravity hundreds of times, but not with a combination of hydroplaning. So it was a very strange sensation that lasted almost 10 seconds. And then when I look back behind, expecting to see the tunnel, I watch it collapse right behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was rotating clockwise as I looked at it, because it was rotating counterclockwise as I flew through it. And I was expecting to be in the clear blue sky that I was aiming for, but that instantly disappeared. And this is where my theory of the electronic fog comes in. It had attached itself to our aircraft. And it took me like 30 years of research to realize finally that I wasn't flying through this fog. I was flying with it. It was attached to us. And that's why everything looks so strange when you're in it. You know, if you're a pilot and this happens, you may think, oh, I'm entering a haze. Well, it may not be a haze. It could be a weaker variety of this electronic fog.
Mm-hmm.
Or if everything looks blurry, though, then you're in a stronger area of this electronic fog that can affect time and space. And that's what was going on while I was in this fog for 3 minutes. And I was able to contact Miami Radio, told them I was about 90 miles east of Miami. And I can't remember exactly what I told them, but they could tell there's something wrong going on. So they tried to help me and locate me, and I was using my transponder to help them locate me, but they couldn't find me on radar, so they were no help at all.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit scary at that point.
Yeah, your dad, you said your dad was at that point like a little bit more frantic.
Yeah, he kind of went into a state of panic. He grabbed a microphone from me and started yelling at the controller. And I had to grab it back from him, calm him down.
Hey, hold on. Hold on. We're going to come. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and wrap this up, okay? So hang on, hang on. We're talking with Bruce Gernon, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. Just trippy time, the way it works, or doesn't. Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Bruce Gernon. At that time, he didn't even know about the Bermuda Triangle, but he was in it, and electronic fog all around him, electric, just looking like a lightning show, and for no reason. So you are, at this point, Dad's panicked. He's already decided something's really wrong. You know something's wrong. Where do we go from there?
Well, I kind of used my mind to steer the airplane because none of the instruments were working for navigation, and our partner in the back seat, he became totally nauseous and was slurring all his words and couldn't understand a word he said.
Mm-hmm.
So it can affect people. It can make people pass out. It can make them nauseous. Or the worst thing, it can make or create spatial disorientation, which has happened to many, many pilots. And they end up in a graveyard spiral.
Yeah.
Because they're so confused. Their instruments aren't working. They don't realize they're flying with this fog, not through it. And so then the 3 minutes in this fog go by, and then the radar controller comes on the microphone, and he's really excited. He says he's got an airplane directly over Miami Beach. I look at my watch, and I've only been flying for 30 minutes. I said, well, no, that's impossible. I told him I'm probably maybe 80, 85 miles east of Miami. He says, are you sure? And then another incredible thing happened. He slipped formed all around the airplane, parallel to the plane, our direction of flight.
Mm-hmm.
And within 10 seconds, the slits opened up, and I could see the clear blue sky through the slits. Within 10 seconds, all the slits were gone, and I was in just crystal clear blue sky, and there's Miami Beach right below me.
Wow.
So I looked behind me expecting to see this huge fog bank that I had just escaped, and it was clear for over 10 miles visibility. There was no fog bank. And, of course, I didn't realize that it was attached to me at that time.
See, that's what's
so
mind-blowing.
We signed off, and I went to Palm Beach International and landed.
Mm-hmm.
And the flight only took 47 minutes. And I had made that flight over a dozen times before, and it always took more like 90 minutes. So there was 30 minutes time somehow that was gained somehow. I got ahead of time.
How do you think, why did you get out? What let you, why did it let you go?
Well, I believe it was because I was transitioning from a large body of ocean, water, to a large body of land. And the atmosphere changed as I traveled over the land from the water, made it electronically detached from the aircraft. So pilots should keep that in mind if they're ever over a large body of water and this fog attaches to them and they can't escape it. Just make one turn and make that turn direct to a large body of land and it should detach. And just the opposite can happen, and it happened once to me over the Everglades. If it attaches to you over a large body of land, make just one turn and make that turn toward a large body of water. And it will detach from you, just like it did for me when I encountered this fog back in 1996 for the second time.
Okay. We're going to have to break. But as a reader and reading that this can also happen on land when you're walking and this fog can approach you and you can see it and it can almost like it's tracking you, that story is also worth a look. You have collected a lot of stories since you've been telling yours. The upshot, what do you want people to take away from this?
Well, I want to thank everybody for writing to me and telling me about their experiences, and I've put them in the book. Some of them, like you said, are pretty incredible in themselves. And I just want, the main thing is for pilots to realize this, because the airplanes are the most unforgiving part if you're caught in this fog. And that someday mainstream science, that's my goal, will recognize this, and in the future, it'll help us to go to other stars.
You bet, you bet. It's another tool that we haven't figured out how to even, at this point, acknowledge or define. But with your experience and your help, that might help. Electronicfog.com, that is the website for Bruce Gernon, the book, Beyond the Bermuda Triangle. All right. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Wendy.
So if you're listening, you know, it's not just ghosts. It's time. It's things that we question, things that we take for granted, that maybe we should question just a little bit more. And experiences like that challenge you to bring your best game. What's really going on here? You'll wonder until you figure it out. Or not. Until then, stay curious. Thanks for listening. Wendy's Coffeehouse.